This is
the Left Pod. Welcome to the Learn English Football Podcast with your hosts, Tim and...
Tom. Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm okay, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I can't complain.
Good, good, good. You say that, but you did have a difficult weekend in the Premier League, your Hammers, didn't you?
We did indeed, yes. But that's not just this weekend. Every time we go to Anfield, we have a difficult time. I believe that we have won once in the league at Anfield since something like the 1960s. That's how bad our record is at Liverpool.
Oh, wow. And were you at that match in the 1960s?
The 60s, of course, was the golden era with Jeff Hurst and Martin Peters. But the match I'm referring to actually happened under Slaven Bilic in that team that had Dimitri Payet and a very young Manuel Lanzini. That was the team that went to Liverpool and won there.
Oh, nice. So, yes, Tom, we've got a Premier League special today. We're here to talk about the top of the table, the race for the Premier League title, and focus on some of the bigger sides, focus on maybe the big six, the big seven nowadays with Newcastle joining the club. And the big question really to start with is, can anyone catch league leaders, reigning Premier League champions, reigning Champions League winners and FA Cup winners, Manchester City? It seems like they've started the season like they never start the season. They've started it well. They've played six games and they've won all six of them. And they're sitting pretty at the top of the table, 2 points ahead of Liverpool. So just to focus on Manchester City first, I've seen a few of their games. I haven't seen all of their games so far, partly because you kind of know what you're getting with Manchester City, which basically means I usually only watch my rivals when I think that they've got a chance of losing. And I find it hard to turn on the Manchester City matches sometimes because I know they're going to steamroller teams. To steamroller somebody or something is to completely flatten it, to move it out of your way, to move an obstacle out of your way as if it doesn't even exist. But some people are saying that this Manchester City side does have chinks in its armour, which means weaknesses in its defences. And I think that's basically based around the fact that they have had some big changes in centre of the park, some of them planned, some of them unplanned. So let's focus on that first. So, of course, they lost this summer Gundogan, who went, to Barcelona, and they lost Riyad Mahrez, who went to Saudi Arabia. They've also had a long-term injury to Kevin De Bruyne, who got injured in the pre-season kind of match, the Charity Shield, which a lot of our European listeners will know as the Super Cup, and that was actually a recurrence of an injury he'd had last season. So I think it's a thigh injury, a hamstring injury that Manchester City do need to take seriously. And of course, any side in the world is a less of a side when you lose a player like Kevin De Bruyne, Tom. So do you think Manchester City through the likes of, for example, Foden, Ruben Neves, Ruben Neves, who's their signing from Wolves?
Mateus Nunes.
Sorry, Neves was the one who went to Saudi Arabia. Do you think they can fill the hole? Of course, they've got Kovacic as well. Do you think they're just going to keep on steamrolling sides, or do you think they might have a blip in form somewhere along the line?
That's a very interesting question. I think in the league, they have enough strength in depth in their squad that it will be very hard for anyone to catch them. We can talk about the prospects of the teams around them soon, but they are certainly the team to beat in the league, as they have been for the last six or seven seasons. In the Champions League, it will be more interesting. That's where we'll see if they have the squad. Because you mentioned players like Mahrez and Gundogan who have gone. Those are very experienced Champions League players. They've been replaced with much younger players in the form of Nunes or Jeremy Doku. These young players will see whether they've got the mettle, meaning they've got the we might say, the wherewithal, the skill, the ability to handle the pressure situations at the end stages of the Champions League. But I don't see them having much problem in the league. I think they're still the number one club that everyone wants to join. They offer fabulous contracts. They can work under, the players can work under Pep Guardiola. There's a serious chance of winning multiple trophies every season. So they're going to continue to attract the best talent in the world. So I think they're still they're going to be very hard to beat this year.
I think it's interesting how you look at this Manchester City side and you lose a player like Kevin De Bruyne. A lot of the English fans will be, there are lots of shouts for Foden to be playing in the De Bruyne role. And you've seen both Pep Guardiola and Gareth Southgate are a bit reluctant to give Foden that freedom of the centre of the park, like a lot of fans would like him to get. And in fact, he's playing Julian Alvarez as a kind of deep-lying attacker. And he's done really well so far. He's scored some goals. And let's not forget, he's a World Cup winner with Argentina. So it's not as if it's a real drop in quality. But he's a very different style of player to Kevin De Bruyne. He does a lot of running, a lot of pressing, and he's really willing to sacrifice himself for the side. Much in kind of the opposite to Kevin De Bruyne, where you think all their play goes through De Bruyne. Well, he's a kind of like, he likes to facilitate other great players contributing to the play. And I think that's a real skill for any side to have, a player who's not the kind of the standout player. I mean, if you think of Real Madrid, the Rodrigo or the Valverde, they're not the Viniciuses or the Benzema last seasons of this world. And I think it's an interesting importance that Pep Guardiola has given him. And as you mentioned, Mateus Nunes and Doku, they both started at the weekend. They have made signings and he doesn't look like he's scared to integrate those signings immediately. Just about Mateus Nunes, really, Tom, I want to focus on. It's a very complex role playing centre midfield for Pep Guardiola. Do you think Nunes can hit the ground running, which means integrate successfully and quickly? Or do you think it's going to be a steep learning curve, which means something which is difficult to adapt to?
I think Nunes will hit the ground running. I don't expect him to be first choice, certainly not when De Bruyne is back. However, you have to consider who are the players around him. He's got Portuguese colleagues in Ruben Dias, Bernardo Silva. They'll be able to help him, put an arm around his shoulder and tell him exactly what Pep's looking for. He is extremely highly rated after the season he had in at Wolves last season. So I don't foresee any problems for him. And I thought that the second goal, the cross he put in perfectly, planting the ball on the head of the big striker, Erling Haaland, was something that we can expect to see more of from Nunes.
Okay, fair enough.
But so Tim, I mentioned the second goal, but I also have to mention the first goal. Manchester City scored the first goal against Nottingham Forest after 7 minutes. Of course, Phil Foden, it was an excellent finish. It was a powered, just above a half volley. It sat up for him. But for me, the credit goes to Kyle Walker. He made a deep run to the byline and he just laid the perfectly weighted ball back into the path of Phil Foden. It was an assist that was so delicious, I would say, as a striker. I would be running straight over to Kyle Walker and giving him all the credit for that goal. It was, for me, that was the assist of the week, or one of the best assists I've seen so far in the Premier League this season.
He is a fantastic player, Kyle Walker. I think we can both agree that this City side does look the complete side and very dangerous. But just to give the rest of the Premier League fans some hope, and of course to the neutrals, if you look at the Manchester City bench, maybe household names are Kelvin Phillips, Nathan Ake and Jack Grealish. And apart from that, they've got a lot of youth who were playing on the bench last week against Manchester City. So, you know, a couple of big injuries in key positions or suspensions or accumulated fatigue from playing midweek and at the weekend every week like they will do. Maybe that could be the way for another team to have a bit of hope in this Premier League. I mean, I think they've now won three Premier Leagues in a row, which is a joint record with Manchester United. So they will be looking to break the record this season for the first time in the history of the Premier League that any side has won four leagues in a row. So, Tom, shall we move on to some of the other teams challenging?
We can do. Just a word about Nottingham Forest, though, because even though they lost 2-0, even though it probably would have been more had Rodri not been sent off at the beginning of the second half, I have to say I've got a lot of hope for this Nottingham Forest team this season. They survived last season and they seem to have built on their side. If you look at their subs bench now, they've got Argentinian internationals like Gonzalo Montiel, Chris Wood, the striker, very experienced. Callum Hudson-Odoi has come back from Germany. Anthony Elanga from Manchester City. Divock Origi, the Liverpool legend who's just come back from a spell in Italy. So they've got great strength in depth in their squad. I expect Nottingham Forest to do better than they did last season.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think they've got stronger. And I think there are definitely three weaker teams this season. So moving on, I'm going to tell you who I think will be the biggest challengers to Manchester City this season. And it's not the side I would like to say, because I'd like to say Arsenal, but I'm actually going to say Liverpool. They've started the season really well. They've only had one draw. I think it was on the opening day against Chelsea. Away at Chelsea, and that's a game which historically has always proven difficult for Liverpool. And also, I think when teams are playing Chelsea, they're still starting games with the idea that Chelsea are a functional side. So I think maybe it would be quite natural for Klopp and the players to have gone into that team, gone into that match thinking, being cautious and thinking that Chelsea would be able to perform. Of course, this is a Chelsea side which is dysfunctional, and we'll come to that later. But since then, they've put a really good run of results together. They beat Bournemouth. Well, they've won all of their games. They came from a goal down and a man down to beat Newcastle away from home. So that was almost a turning point for them from a momentum point of view. But really, I mean, they've made massive improvements to their starting 11 compared to last season. Of course, they've lost some big names in midfield, but I think they were probably names that they were ready to lose. I mean, Fabinho had been a great servant, but last season he looked like he'd lost his legs. And I think Henderson as well. He was a player that really depended on wanting it more than everyone else, being able to cover more ground. And when you stop being able to cover that extra ground with a player like Henderson, you're just left with a player who's maybe not technically as good as some of his teammates. And I think that was starting to show. Whereas you look at this midfield they had last game, they had Alexis McAllister, who I know you're a big fan of. They had Szoboszlai, who's come in this summer, has looked really good. They've had Curtis Jones as well, who I think is an underrated player. But of course, they've signed Gravenbach from Bayern Munich and Endo from the German league as well. So they've totally revamped that midfield, and to revamp is to like refurbish the midfield. And I think it's making them look fresh. I think Darwin Nunez has started the season well. I know he's had a lot of criticism for his lack of finishing, but I think he's one of those players that because of his physicality and his strength of running and his movement, he does get more chances than a lot of players. So I do think he can afford to miss some. It was a great finish this weekend. I don't want to rub the salt in the wounds. I think another factor as well is the fact that they haven't got any European football. So Jurgen Klopp can midweek while Manchester City are traveling around Europe, getting tired and injuries and the like. Jurgen Klopp can keep his players fresh, can work on new tactics, can spend time integrating some of those new faces. And I think also this Liverpool side were two seasons ago right up there with the best teams in the world. And I think they had a bad season, but I think it was one of those seasons where they started badly. They realized because they'd started badly, they couldn't win the things they really wanted to win. And because of that, all of the players kind of didn't stop trying, but mentally they stopped giving it 110% every game. And I think now that it's all to play for once again, it's very easy for Klopp to say, right, guys, we're back. We're back in a position to win. We're back in a position to go for all of the trophies. And it looks like they're playing with that same intensity that we all associate with Jurgen Klopp sides. So, Tom, I mean, I know you watched West Ham Liverpool at the weekend, or sorry, Liverpool West Ham at Anfield. What were your impressions of that game? And taking it further, do you think Liverpool have got enough strength to push for the title?
I would agree with your analysis that Liverpool are very, very dangerous this year. In that particular game against West Ham, they just overpowered us. What was noticeable, first of all, was you had the Klopp high-pressing tactics, but you also just had the raw pace of the players who were running forward. So, as you mentioned, Nunez or Mo Salah, Luis Diaz was playing on the left. The midfielders, Szoboszlai and McAllister, both fantastic distributors of the ball. McAllister actually had a very interesting battle with Paquetá, who also had a very, very good game in the West Ham midfield. But ultimately, McAllister made the difference with the second goal, with the game tied at 1-1. The West Ham low block, the defence was just a little bit too far back, gave McAllister a bit too much space in midfield to pick out his pass, and he just put it on a sixpence, which is a way of saying he just played a perfectly flighted ball over the top of the West Ham centre-backs into the path of Darwin Nunez, who placed his volley to the side of the keeper. It was a wonderful goal set up by McAllister. You cannot give these Liverpool players any time, any space in midfield, or you will be punished. So the combination of these two new midfielders, Szoboszlai and McAllister, and their range of passing, coupled with the raw pace of that Liverpool attack, means that they will be a match for anyone playing at home at Anfield this year. My only question as the season wears on, do they have the strength in depth? I certainly think they do with their attacking substitutes. They were able to bring on Gravenberch, Gakpo, and Jota at the end of the game. Jota immediately got himself on the score sheet. Endo came on as well, of course, but those three attacking substitutes can hurt anyone. The question is whether they've got the strength in depth in their defensive and holding midfielders. They had Konate on the bench. They've got Tsimikas. Apart from that, I'm not quite sure if they've got as much as Manchester City. But Tim, you made a very good point. They're only in one campaign. They're not playing in Europe. They will be able to keep their players fresh. So yes, I think it will be close. See, with this challenge between Liverpool and Manchester City, I think could go right down to the end of April or May. I'm not going to say who I think is going to win, though.
Is that because you don't want to reveal your thoughts, or because you don't have a clue?
No, because I will probably say Manchester City, but that might just be, I have said who I think is going to win. But I would love it to be Liverpool, but I don't want to jinx them. To jinx someone is to make a prediction in someone's favour and then curse that prediction.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting season if Liverpool can get back to their best, because when we saw Liverpool going hammer and tong with Manchester City, which means battling at full battle, full strength, is that Liverpool on their day had the beating of Pep Guardiola's Manchester City. You saw it in the Champions League various times. You saw it in the league various times. Often what made Manchester City win those titles was the fact that they'd never had an off day. But against Liverpool on their day, I think Liverpool scare Manchester City, and I think Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp scares Pep Guardiola. And you can see that in terms of the historical matches they've played against each other, the lineups that Pep's gone with. You know that Pep's sometimes accused of overthinking things in the big games, like he did in the Champions League when he played without a striker in the final, or without a defensive midfielder in a different important match. And he was also making strange decisions against Liverpool. And you're kind of thinking that's the result of Pep staying up late, not being able to sleep, having these problems going around his football genius mind, and finding a special solution. And I really think he overthinks things sometimes when the pressure's on. And I think Liverpool are a team that are are able to apply pressure to Pep Guardiola and his Manchester City side in a way that, for example, my team Arsenal weren't able to do last season. So, Tom, moving on to some of the other teams, I'll ask you a different question that I was going to ask you, actually. Are they the only two teams who can win it? Or can an Arsenal or a Tottenham or a Manchester United or a Chelsea or even a Newcastle compete?
I think that those two teams are head and shoulders above the competition. Then I think you have in the mix, yes, Brighton have started fantastically. Aston Villa have started well, but I expect that the European campaigns they'll be involved in will test the depth of their squads. So I think that Arsenal will come up. I also expect Newcastle to come up. You know, they recorded a record 8-0 or 8-0 away win against Sheffield United. I think they've shown us now the talent, the quality they have. So I expect them to be in the mix. So if I was going to say who's going to get the Champions League places, I would say Arsenal, Newcastle are the next best clubs. And then Brighton and Tottenham will be competing for the next one. Possibly Manchester United, but their form will have to improve.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Arsenal-Tottenham at the weekend, a 2-2 draw at the Emirates, a fantastic match for the neutral, a frustrating match probably for both Arsenal and Tottenham fans. Just from an Arsenal point of view, I think they signed well in the summer. We look like we have a stronger squad. But I do think there are some problems. Firstly, I think we've got problems in front of goal, both in terms of quality and depth. I think Gabriel Jesus is an absolutely wonderful player. But if you were to pick one weakness in his game, it would be his finishing. He does need more chances than the average striker to score the goals. That is offset or counterbalanced by the fact that he does generate a lot of chances. But, for example, this weekend, Arsenal were 1-0 up. Gabriel Jesus got the ball in an opportunity where he had to score. And he didn't even hit the target. And that would have made the game 2-0 and probably pushed it out of Tottenham's reach. Certainly the crowd and the atmosphere would have been very difficult for Tottenham to come back into the game. And you think of those decisive moments. You need a decisive striker. And furthermore, up front, we've got problems because the substitute striker is Eddie Nketiah. And I think he's a very honest player. I think he's workmanlike. I don't dislike him as a person or his attitude. But we have to be brutally honest, at the top level, he needs to be able to contribute more, both with quality and intelligence on the ball. He's often got a loose first touch. I just don't think he's good enough, really. And if you look at Manchester City, who's up front for them? Well, they've got Erling Haaland and World Cup winner in Julian Alvarez. And if you think of Liverpool, they've got Darwin Nunez, they've got Diego Jota, they've got Salah, of course, who's guaranteed to score 20 Premier League goals.
So I think Gakpo Arsenal on the bench.
Yeah, I think he'll probably stay on the bench, though. So I'm not too worried about him. But I also think Arsenal have made a curious signing in terms of Kai Havertz, because he's cost a lot of money, so much money that that kind of transfer fee demands a starting position. I don't really think he's a number 8. I don't really think he's a number 10, and he's certainly not a number 9. So I'm interested to see what his long-term best position is. He's managed already to lose his place in the Arsenal side. We're playing Fabio Vieira, who couldn't buy a start last season. So all of a sudden, we're relying on players who last season couldn't get a look into the starting lineup. Having said that, we do look solid. Declan Rice looks to have been a good buy, but we've got the same injuries as last season. We've got Thomas Partey out. Zinchenko hasn't managed to finish 90 minutes once this season. And we loaned Kieran Tierney to Real Sociedad. So I think there are weaknesses in our squad. And another side that teams are talking about is, of course, Tottenham. Tottenham have had a very good start to the season. They level on points with Arsenal, which means they've won 4 and drawn 2. They've had a big victory against Manchester United, of course. However, I think there I think the problem is slightly different for Tottenham. I think their starting 11 actually is quite functional. I think Ange Postecoglou has really changed the mood at Tottenham and got the players playing some good football and a style of football that the fans can connect with. But this weekend, James Maddison got an injury, and I think he's really changing the way they're playing. And the second he left the pitch, it was like they were watching Tottenham from last season again. They had no kind of creativity or intelligence in the middle of the park. And again, Heung-min Son got injured and he had to go off. And of course, they've got no Harry Kane. So they've been quite intelligent this season. They're playing Son almost as a striker to replace the Kane role. And so if Son's not there, then they're going to have to rely on Richarlison, who I know he scored last weekend, but I think that was his first or second Premier League goal for Tottenham in over a season playing for them. So I think that's going to be their weakness, injuries. But I do think on paper, if they had a season like Leicester had, or where everyone stays fit, or like Arsenal had last season, where everyone stayed fit until the last month or so of the season, then they could push. And it pains me to say it, because obviously I don't like them one bit, but they were playing some really good football at the weekend against us, and some attractive football as well. So maybe they can. What do you think, Tom? Do you think this Arsenal or Tottenham side can push on, or do you think it's going to be a bit too much for them?
I expect something quite similar from Arsenal. Yes, they've brought in a couple of players here and there, Declan Rice, Kai Havertz, but ultimately it's the same group of players with the same system. I expect they will be up thereabout, but a little bit off the pace, meaning just a bit too far behind Man City, but perhaps very good for a cup run. That might be in the Champions League latter stages, or it might be the FA Cup or the League Cup. Tottenham is a bit of a mystery to me, because I've looked at the Tottenham defence over the last few seasons and felt there's a lot of weakness there. And they've done something about it. They've really changed their defence. You've talked positively about the goalkeeper, Vicario. They've bought a Dutch player, Van de Ven. I think he is one of the centre-backs. Udogi, an Italian left-back. So there's new faces in that defence. It's really interesting to see if these Tottenham players can settle into a solid defensive formation. So far, not too bad, but let's see when they're really tested later on. And again, with Tottenham, it's a bit like, I'm seeing something a bit like with West Ham, where Harry Kane's going, everyone's thinking, oh no, how can Tottenham do well without their talisman, main striker, a bit like West Ham with Declan Rice, their captain. But actually what you see is that when the player goes, it creates space. It kind of liberates the players around to some new players to step forward and be willing to step up into that role. So I still feel like I want to see Tottenham test by a really good side. Arsenal are quite a good side. Manchester United are quite a good side. But let's see how Tottenham do in the Champions League, or when they really come up against City or Liverpool. Then I will know more about this team.
Well, of course, Tottenham aren't in the Champions League. They're in the Europa League
League. That's right. But so I'll have to wait till the latter stages of the Europa League.
Then. Yeah, I can't miss the opportunity to say that Arsenal are the only London team in the Champions League this season. Moving on, Tom, to two sides who I think we agreed pre-podcast were definitely not going to compete for the league, but on paper and financially definitely should be competing. So we've got two sides who I think are unarguably in crisis at the moment. And one of them, two giants of English football, giants over the last, the whole time we've been watching football, Chelsea and Manchester United. Let's start with Chelsea, Tom. I think they've got two wins in the last 17 matches. They've got just five league goals going into this weekend. Six league goals this season. Of course, three of them were against Luton. So they've only scored three goals in their other games. I think they've got the fewest wins in 2023 of any Premier League side. No, sorry, the joint fewest wins, and they've failed to score in 13 Premier League games in 2023. And that is the most of any Premier League side. And it's a strange thing, Tom. They've spent so much money and they've changed the manager, but the problems are still there. I think the problems have changed a little bit. I think under Graham Potter, they had a manager who couldn't deal with the egos of the players. I think under Frank Lampard, they had a manager who was just completely unprepared, without the right experience for a job of that size. With Pochettino, they've got a man with a track record of winning nothing in England, but he's got a good reputation for taking Spurs to the Champions League final. And of course, he got his league winners trophy in France. But there's something wrong there, Tom. They're not scoring goals. They signed Jackson Martinez, from Villarreal for 25 million.
Nicholas Jackson.
And he's got five yellow cards, but he's yet to score a goal. And, you know, the goals, they're creating lots of chances, but the goals aren't going in. Tom, do you think the goals will eventually start going in? I wonder, because I don't associate Pochettino with a false nine role. I can imagine maybe using some of their quality wingers or an attacking midfielder in a false nine role, but that's not a position I associate with Pochettino. I associate him having a proper number nine. And if they're just relying on Jackson, then I think they're going to have problems. What do you think, Tom?
This Chelsea team have been going downhill. They've been getting progressively worse now for well over a year. Obviously, Pochettino is a proven Premier League manager. He's done great work at Southampton, great work at Tottenham. So we have to believe that he is the man who can turn them around if they will give him enough time. And I think given the amount of time they gave Graham Potter and Frank Lampard when he was, well, obviously Frank Lampard the first time, it was a different board in charge of the club. But I think they will stick with Pochettino because they've seen that the club was in crisis. This particular squad of players was struggling to score goals, was struggling to penetrate and create chances against defences. So they've got to give Pochettino a chance to turn it around. But the signings they've made, they've wasted a lot of money, I think. I think they've bought very poorly. Pochettino it feels like he's sticking with players like Mudryk, desperate to boost their confidence. But when you watch Mudryk play, you realize that he's a player who is hopelessly underconfident. He's losing the ball way too much as soon as he comes under pressure. Pochettino is preferring Levi Colwill over Ben Chilwell. I don't understand that decision. Obviously, at the weekend, Malo Gusto got sent off, their French fullback, and that put them at a disadvantage against Aston Villa. However, you look at Moises Caicedo and you say, 115 million, was it pounds, euros, whatever it is. How can they spend that much money on one player? Nicholas Jackson, the same as you mentioned. You look at this Chelsea team and there's maybe four players on the team sheet who I would say, yes, they are proven Premier League quality. That's Enzo Fernandez. That's Thiago Silva. That's Sterling. And yes, the rest of them, Robert Sanchez did it at Brighton, but even he got dropped by Brighton last season because they wanted a goalkeeper. He wasn't their first choice. They wanted a goalkeeper who was more comfortable playing the ball out the back.
And to be honest, I don't think Manchester City would have sold Raheem Sterling if they thought he was still doing the business. I don't think Sterling is the same player he was two or three seasons ago. It's a crisis. I mean, last night after the match, one of the Chelsea directors, the sub director, Begdad Egbalali, went into the training room and told off the players in front of the manager. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that divides players, that divides the unity of the core of the group. I think it's worrying. I think it's very worrying. So, Manchester Tom.
Manchester United. Let's have a word on Manchester United.
Moving on to Manchester United. Yes. I mean, they are also a club in crisis.
But they did win. They did win at the weekend against Burnley, 1-0.
Yeah, but that kind of says it all. When you're winning 1-0 against Burnley and celebrating it, that is kind of telling you all about the problem. And before that, they'd had a lucky win against Wolves where they got a lucky penalty shout going their way and a win against Nottingham Forest where they were 2-0 down after 6 minutes. So it hasn't started well. You know, it's again, they've had problems with Anthony, who now looks like he's taking himself away from football to fight some accusations against him. Jadon Sancho has fallen out of love with the squad. They got rid of De Gea, who was a big character in the dressing room and one of the club's most loyal players, to bring in Onana, who couldn't catch a cold at the moment. He's been awful. And, you know, they lost in Europe. They were lucky to only lose 4-3 against Bayern Munich. They lost to Brighton 3-1. And the thing about the Brighton match, nobody was surprised with the result. It was obvious that that was going to be the result. It seems like all their hopes are in a 19, 20-year-old striker, Hojlund, who's been brought in for big money. But don't you think, I mean, you look at this side, Casemiro, McTominay, Eriksen, the midfield isn't generating enough. And the big worry for me, Tom, and we haven't got much time, is that Erik ten Hag, after some of these matches, has come out and said, yes, but we're creating chances. And I'm speaking to Manchester United fans who are saying, yes, but we might have created chances, but we didn't touch the ball for most of the match. And United fans are used to dominating matches, and it doesn't look like they're capable of doing that at the moment. So, Tom, do you think Erik ten Hag can turn this around? Or do you think it's time to maybe start thinking about another caretaker manager at United? What do you think is going to happen?
Tim, I don't worry about the United attack. I think their midfield and their strikers are looking good. They've got strength in depth. They've just signed Sofyan Amrabat, one of arguably the best players of last year, and certainly at the Qatar World Cup. I worry about their defence, actually. You know, Onana has been shaky. Against Burnley, they played Lindelof, Reguilon, Dalot and Evans. Johnny Evans, I think he's a quality defender, but he must be like 37, 38 years old now. Of course, on the bench, they had Rafael Varane. We can expect Lisandro Martinez to come back, the Argentinian fantastic defender from. But I'm not sure if they've got the strength in depth in their defence. I think that's going to be their weak point this season, and also the goalkeeper. So let's see.
Yeah, Tom, I think that's all we've got time for on the Learn English Football Podcast. Thank you very much. We'll be back for more Premier League assessment in the close future, and Champions League and La Liga. It's all happening. Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'll see you next time.
See you next time, Tim. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye-bye.